Welcome to For the Long Run, the podcast exploring the why behind what keeps runners running long, strong, and motivated. I'm your host, Jonathan Levitt. Through personal and professional connections in the running world, I have the privilege of getting to know some amazing athletes. I've always been fascinated by the psychological aspect of running, and this podcast is aimed at exploring this and much more. I hope you enjoy. This episode is sponsored by Jonji. Jonji is a local to Boston running apparel company dedicated to exploring, connecting, and giving back through running. Inspired by travel, informed by function, and built for adventure, Jonji makes running essentials to equip you wherever you run or roam. The company was founded on the core belief that water is a human right and donates 2% of their sales to supporting clean water organizations around the world. I've known the two co-founders of Jonji for over 5 years, and it's been a privilege to see them grow and increase the level at which they've been able to give back to the running community and to the world in general. Welcome back. I have Judy Kasiyama joining me today. Judy, or Juju, thanks so much for taking some time to chat.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
First question. Who is Juju?
Who is Juju? Oh, I feel like Juju has a lot of identity. I'm an outdoor activist that works on diversity and inclusion in the outdoor out here in Vancouver, BC. I love trying sports and getting people to come on these crazy adventures alongside me so we can just have fun. I enjoy traveling. I'm very much like a world traveler. I was born in Democratic Republic of Congo. Raised in South Africa, Australia. I lived in the U.S. for 10 years and then immigrated to Canada about 10 years ago. So I'm existing in this world and just trying to do what I can to make the world a little bit more brighter and more accessible. And that is through just like outdoor sports and getting people of color out there.
That's awesome. It reminds me of one of the last things I ever heard my grandfather say, which is the meaning of life is to leave the world a better place than when you entered it, and you're living proof of that mission. So it's always super cool to connect with people who are doing those kinds of things. So let's sort of set the foundation of you as an athlete. So do you remember your first run?
My first run. Oh, when was my first run? I would say was in grade 6. We just moved from Australia to from Australia to California. And it was, in the school, the middle school I was going to, they had this program called Run Across America, where it's like every Friday, it was like a cross country kind of run. And yeah, so I would say that that would be like my kind of like first time where I would say like I kind of enjoyed running enjoy running. But in terms of like running, growing up in the DRC, I feel like I was always on the run, in a sense that there was just so much freedom growing up, through play, through anything. So always running around as kids. So I would say those are my two memory of running.
Awesome. And where did your love for world travel and just a quick scroll through your Instagram shows some absolutely incredible places. Mm-hmm. So where did your love for exploration come from?
My love for exploration honestly came from my mom. So when we were young, back in the 90s, my mother decided that she wanted to travel the world, and she didn't want to, not the fact that she had kids like to stop her. And she said, when she was 16 years old, she read about a place called Australia in geography class, and she was just fascinated by Australia. So it was her mission to one day go to Australia. Yeah. So she took us kids to Australia. And then through that, just like my parents' like job was taking us everywhere. So just through that, I've come to realize like I really enjoy traveling because it gives me it forces me to stop being comfortable and be in a different culture where language I may not understand. I may not understand, you know, the customs, and just kind of like be that vulnerable and just observe what other people are doing, how the culture is, and just learn from that. So for me, I think that's why I enjoy traveling so much. It's just this ability of being humbled and then being able to learn something new and being curious. And I think that as we get older, we kind of stop being curious. So, and especially like being curious of people who may be different than us, who may come from different background than us, there's like no curiosity in getting to know that culture. But whereas for me, I always find it as an opportunity to learn something new. And through that, I think it just makes me a better person in terms of how I develop empathy towards other people and other communities, and even empathy towards myself.
I love that. Something you said in particular that resonated is it forces you to stop being comfortable. I think that the world would be a better place if everyone experienced the right kind of discomfort on a bit of a more regular basis. And I think at least endurance sport allows people to explore that. And, and what I've found is that getting uncomfortable in that arena has translated to getting uncomfortable in life. And once you can sort of play in the sandbox of endurance, where, to be honest, like there aren't a lot of repercussions if you do something and it doesn't go well. You learn, you know, hopefully don't go to the hospital or whatever. But you know, if you bonk on a run, it's a mistake, but it's not. You're not harming someone. You're not, you know, hurting someone's feelings, things like that. And hopefully, like flexing that muscle on a regular basis can allow us to do it in life.
Yeah, I'm totally agree with you on that. I think, you know, anytime you do like an endurance sport, like running or ultra running, there is a level of discomfort. There's a level of you really being humbled. You know, because as you go out into nature and in these spaces, like I think sometimes as humans, we feel like we have the right gear, we have everything. So therefore nature, we kind of, you know, have this hold on nature. But then once you start doing these things, you just realize that, hey, I may not always have control. And then letting go of that control, I find there's so much freedom in that when you stop trying to have that much control. And leaning in into that discomfort, because yeah, your body's going to hurt. You're going to feel all these different things, but you still persevere through. And then at the end of the day, you're like, wow, that was amazing. You know, I want to do it again when the endorphin kicks in.
So talk to me about a time you were humbled in nature.
Oh, the time I was humbled in nature.
Yeah.
I'm constantly humble in nature, to be very honest with you. Right now, I am learning to mountain bike, and I've gone from like very green to now I'm in blue and doing maybe, I would say, 45% of blacks runs. And I find that that is humbling. Every time I do a different sport, I am automatically humbled because it forces me to, A, get in tune with my body, to understand how my body moves, and then to trust in my body and to trust in my ability. And I find like I'm constantly being humble just through whatever activity I'm doing in nature. Even when if I'm doing like a 4-day backpacking trip, I am very much humbled because it's a long walk. It's you're in your mind a lot, and you're psychologically just like thinking a lot about things, and it's a very humbling thing. So yeah, because currently I would say I'm been constantly being humble through mountain biking and just through learning how to ride a bike down a mountain, and you know, and not try to kill myself through all these different rocks and branches that I'm going through. So yeah, it's a constant reminder that, you know, every time I think I progress, there's always like this other added element that, you know, I find myself being humbled and also, like, you know, as I approach these different features and stuff like that, I find through that humbleness, it allows me to also be able to do activities safely without this sense of cockiness or this sense of pride or showing off. Like, I'm humble to be like, I can do this, or my body at this moment cannot do this. I'm going to walk this trail instead of writing it down. So yeah, I find, like, you know, whatever element we're doing, whether it's like running or I'm going down a mountain bike, we're constantly always being humbled and also understanding like how far we can push our body, not just our physical body, but also our mental, our mind as well.
Yeah, I think the mental side of it is fascinating. It's really the crux of this podcast and sort of exploring how do we unlock that next level and how do we get to that next level of what feels comfortable and leveling up. And the way I like to put it is like what feels normal today used to be hard or inaccessible or challenging. And I think that's one of the things I love most about sports. So shifting gears a little bit or a lot, you mentioned that activism and allowing more or having more people participating in endurance sports and hiking and biking and all the fun things we do outside as a goal. You're the founder of Color the Trails, which you describe as a group for people of color and allies interested in outdoor activities, including hiking, skiing, snowboarding, kayaking, biking. So my first question is, what was like the culminating piece that caused you to start this?
Yeah, I've been always a very active child. I play a lot of basketball when I was in high school. I did some track. And when we immigrated to Canada 10 years ago, I was doing a lot of trail running, which I, at that time, I didn't know it was trails. So my family lived near a trail. So I'll just go run on the trails. So for me, I didn't just really think there was like a sport called trail running, which I think is kind of funny looking back because I'm like, well, I'm just running. And then when I moved to Vancouver, if anybody knows Vancouver, they know that Vancouver is like Disneyland for adults just because you can do so much. Whatever you enjoy, whatever your activity is, Vancouver is the hub for it, I would say, because we have three local ski resort not far away within like an hour drive, less than that. And then with that, we have the water. If you enjoy like water sport activities, or you can do biking, whatever it is, you can find your interest in Vancouver. And after graduating university, I really wanted to, like, with all the stress and everything and trying to figure out what to do next, I started doing a lot of hikes. And on the hikes, and, you know, when I go out on hikes, I do see like diversity of folks. But when I began to go purchase my gear and like begin to spend my money, I recognized like a lot of major brand that advertised the outdoors like didn't really showcase somebody that looked like me that was like in nature. And it made me kind of feel a little bit weird because I'm like, am I the only Black person that hike? Like, where are all the other Black people? Where are all the other BIPOC? Like, where's everybody? So, and Vancouver also, there's a lot of different Facebook groups in terms of outdoor activity. There's like, you know, there's like a woman hiking group. There's a lot of like LGBTQ riding hiking groups, safe spaces for a lot of different people in different community and however way folks identify. So I was like, but for me, I just didn't, you know, I feel like I can go into certain spaces, but I just still didn't feel always welcome because I was very kind of new to things. I didn't really feel like there was much representation, or if I joined some events, I just felt like I was always the odd one out. So I was like, you know what? Like, you know, I'm just going to create my own. I'm going to create something else to give people an option. So yeah, that's why I founded Color the Trails. When I initially started it, it was under the name of Black People Hike Vancouver. And then I rebranded and I just called Color the Trails. And my whole hope was just to basically create an opportunity for Black, Indigenous, and people of color who are interested in the outdoors or who are already in the outdoors, for us to just kind of have like a meetup where we can go hike together, get to connect, just because Vancouver itself, as you mentioned earlier, it is a friendly city, but it's also very much, people are very kind of closed off with their own kind of little bubbles. So it's really hard to make new friends. And especially because I was going to school in a different city and then outside of the city and then moving into the city, it was really hard to like find that community. So I was like, this is a really great way to meet people and just kind of organize hikes. And for like the last 3 years, we're just doing hikes, just like trying to get people to know who I am in the community and like what are my intentions are. And so just like, honestly, just like organizing hikes, organizing snowshoeing trips, and just trying to let people, members in the community, to know like these activities are available to them. Because it seems like there's also like a lot of stereotypes regarding like mountains and like who has access to mountain, just like finding like there's not a lot of opportunity or even like education being passed down in terms of accessibility and who has access to a lot of our public parks. So so that's how kind of Color the Trail was birthed. And now just seeing how now getting a lot of support from the community to not just do hiking, but to begin to introduce people to kayaking. We did a kayaking trip, intro to kayaking, where we got taught like how to paddle properly. And it may seem like this is not a big deal for a lot of people who might be listening, but there's just like a lot of fear, not understanding, and sometimes I think a lack of knowledge in terms of how to, you know, be able to engage in this activity. And what Color the Trail does, it just basically provides that information for folks and they can come out, learn how to kayak so that, you know, comes next summer, if they want to go rent a kayak, they have at least the knowledge in terms of how to use the kayak, what are some of the safety things and where you can go. And they don't feel intimidated. They feel a lot more safer because they have this knowledge, and then they can engage in that. And it doesn't have to be with Color the Trails. It can be on their own, with their family, with their friends, but just kind of providing that information and that knowledge, which I think is like really important. And for a lot of the Black, Indigenous, and people of color, we've honestly been left out when it comes to conversation about the outdoors and stuff like that, just because for many of us, especially me coming into Canada as an immigrant, like I didn't have time to be able to explore all these different activities, just because I was, you know, striving to survive coming to a new country, going to school, paying for school and all these things. And I feel like a lot of us who've graduated, feeling a little bit more relaxed and less stress. And then I'm just using nature as a way for us to also kind of like get rid of that stress. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. Societal part aside, what is your goal for Color the Trails in terms of events or activations or mm-hmm. or things to do in other cities or countries?
Mm-hmm. My whole purpose is basically I want to grow Color the Trails organically, and that is through relationship and community building and partnering up with local businesses to engage this. But most importantly is also beginning to create content that is diverse, that tells different stories of different lived experiences and the benefit that we all experience in the outdoors. And I think there's a lack of that. There's like not a lot of stories about those individual or those of us who are even coming into skiing or mountain biking later in life, and like the joy that we are finding in these sports, even though we're finding it later in life, but we're still enjoying it and we are not going out to do it like an elite level. We're doing it for mental health, for physical health, or just like, you know, as 2020 has been, just like another way of really reconnecting with nature, just because I feel like for a long time, many of us were just like working and not really taking the time to be out in nature and appreciate what we have, especially what we have here in Vancouver. So for me, it's more focusing on community building as well as like content creation, which is Color the Trail works in producing. And through that, partnering with brands and be able to create with them diversity of content while they're also supporting Color the Trail, support on events on their behalf for the members of the community that we're part of.
Can you talk a little bit about, I love that. Can you talk a little bit about like where your organizational strategy and like where did this come from in terms like your ability to organize communities? Is that something that's just ingrained in who you are, or is that did that come from specific educational experiences? Like,
I think it's a little bit of both. I come like coming from DR Congo, we're very community based kind of culture compared to, I would say, like the West or North America is very individualistic. We're very communal. So like everything we do is it has an impact in the community. So for me, I also think my own personality, like I value relationship. I value time with people. So for me, I find the best way to do that is instead of just, you know, meeting to go shopping or something like that, it's like, okay, how do we then meet, like, you know, to go a walk in nature because it's benefiting us both. Because I find, I don't know, like when you're in the outdoors, I find like your bond with people just like grow so faster. Like, you know, if you go on a hike, you meet somebody on a trail or even on a run, you just get to know that person and develop and bond so much faster than I would say like meeting for coffees and stuff like that. So for me, I just find like that's like a really nice way of building that community. And also Vancouver, everybody's kind of scattered. Like the Black community here is like 1% of the total population in Vancouver. So we're a very small small demographic of people here. But and for me, it was just like another way of trying to connect with a lot of Black people that I was like, where is everybody? I see a lot of folks when I'm out, but I just don't know where everybody lives. So I just find like this is just like another way to connect. And then to be able to connect with other BIPOC as well has just been a really great opportunity because to engage with a lot of our Indigenous communities, seeing how I can be a great ally and support in however way, and just know that I'm here to support whatever initiative that they have as well. I think it's just a really beautiful way. And I do have a degree in international studies, global policy, as well as gender studies and history. So one thing, you know, in all my studies that I come to find is like the best way to engage folks is like being everything, being very community-based and supporting people that way. That's like the best form of support, engagement, and education. So for me, that's how I'm just kind of taking what I've also studied in my undergrad and just kind of applying that more within the Vancouver setting and within my own local setting, because I think oftentimes when we think about helping people, it's so ingrained, especially in North America, to go somewhere to help people that we don't take the time to be like, well, who are in my community that may need help? Who are in my community that may have never done trail running or is curious about it, but, you know, doesn't know how? How can I support them so they can, you know, do good in this, you know, in this sport or engage in this activity? So I think we focus so much on the, like, you know, people somewhere needing our help that we don't take the time to build the community that's around us and the people that's around us. And I find, yeah, that's just kind of my motto, because I would just want to focus what's here. And then slowly, as we begin to see if Color the Trail will be able to be open up chapters in different provinces or even in the states, it's like, yeah, I want to be able to see who is in the community and how are they already engaged in the community so we can work together.
I love that. And one of the things you said is really hits home, I guess, pun intended, with the best way to experience a new place or the best way to experience a community is to experience it and get in there. Before COVID, I traveled a lot for work, and instead of staying in a hotel, my favorite thing would be to stay with a friend who lives there. And there's no better way to explore a new place than with a local. And one of the things you have in your bio is like one of my favorite things I've seen. It says, "Don't ask me where I'm from, ask me where I'm a local." And so it's that like exploration of a new place with a local as a way to really understand what the heartbeat of that place.
Yeah. And I think like oftentimes, like, you know, people want to know where I'm from, and I'm like, that doesn't really matter. It's the fact that I'm in this community in Vancouver right now. I think that's what it should matter. Because I find sometimes like asking people, I think it's like, you know, in conversation, it's great to know, like, you know, my family history. I'm not ashamed to say I'm from DR Congo, because I think it's also a learning opportunity. But when, you know, when we approach that conversation with like where you're from, I find for me personally, I'm already on guard, because it's almost like you're different, you don't belong here, kind of thing. Whereas if you ask me, oh, I'm a local, like, you know, for me, that's why I say I'm a local to Vancouver, and I want to build that up. And also, I think it's a great opportunity for a lot of us to, like you mentioned, be able to see the talent, be able to see the amazing individual that's in our community, and find friendship that we may never have been able to find and connect that way. And those are just people like within our, you know, our community, because I feel like in some ways we're so ingrained to always go somewhere, you know, form for friendship from somewhere else, that we miss out on the potential and the ability to establish relationship with a lot of our neighbors who are just around us. Cause I find, through that human connection, to connecting with people who's in our community, I find that's how we're able to even build a very stronger, more accepting society, by just also focusing on our local, because eventually everything, in history, we talk about history from below versus from history from above. This idea that a lot of times change happens when we look at history, because whoever ends up winning the war is always going to tell the story. But most of the time we forget that in a lot of movements, it's people on the ground who were pushing and advocating and getting policy change when it was coming from people on the ground, versus the politician versus their leaders and all that. So it's like, if we really want to have like a space where things are changing in our society, we really need to start looking at how are we ourselves within the local context, what are we doing in our local community to engage and support others?
Yeah, I love that. And I think that if you multiply that by 10 or 1,000 or 10,000 or 100,000, that's what creates change. It's not, it's not doing these, it's not moving mountains by yourself. It's what can you do in your own community or in your own place of work or with your group of friends or whatever to be different and to grow. And again, if you multiply that across everyone, that's change. What would be your definition of community?
My definition of community, my definition of community is having a safe space where people can come and just be who they are, without worrying so much about how the world sees them, but just having this like safe space where all of us can just come and be and celebrate each other. And yeah, that's how I kind of see community. I just see it as like a space of freedom where we're not, you know, where we don't feel because we're Black, we don't belong in this space. Or if we're queer, we don't belong in this space. No, I see it as a place where we can all collectively come and just be who we want to be. And just kind of establish that relationship.
I love that. I think that's a great definition. Thanks again to Jonji for sponsoring the podcast. I've enjoyed seeing Jonji grow over the years, and their gear has only gotten better as time has gone on. I have a few pairs of both the AFO split and AFO middle shorts and highly recommend them. Their singlets are super cool too. You can take 15% off all month with the code FTLR15. I hope you love them as much as I do. And now back to our conversation. Where have you felt the strongest sense of that community?
Where have I felt that sense, the strongest sense of community?
Mm-hmm.
I would say growing up in the DRC was where I felt like the greatest sense of community. It was...
What were the pieces that contributed to that?
Yeah, the pieces, I would say, like, everybody was always looking out for each other. And as a child, like, everybody in the community was always, like, responsible for you. So I can go wherever I want, but whoever is an adult in our community was always, like, in the lookout for me and my friends. So I think there's always that element of, as we all know, there's, like, you know, there's an African proverbs where it takes a village to raise a child. And it's, like, very much true where it's, like, the entire community is engaged. And for me, I feel like that's where I felt the strongest sense of community, as well as I got older when we were in, cause we were in the States for 10 years and during those 10 years is a very hard time in my family's life. My parents separated, my father left us and my mom was a single mom trying to, like, you know, with four kids. And there was just like a community in North Andover, Massachusetts that kind of got behind us and supported us a lot, whether it was financially or just like giving us rides between school and like after school practices. It was just like really cool to see people, strangers that I didn't know, step up and like support us during just kind of like that time in history where we were like in really hard place. And that I think really began to shaped a lot because it was like in my teenage years, I really shaped me into who I am today, because I think in so much it's like, I want to pay forward this immense gratitude that people who stepped in, when we didn't have much, gave so much. And for me, I was like, okay, then how do I pay this forward into a community that I'm part of now? And that is just through Color the Trails, I find, just creating these events, getting people outside and getting people to experience different sport that they may never have experienced. And then watching them, like, you know, experience that joy or that passion and be like, mountain biking is my sport. I'm going to invest in it. Thank you for connecting me to this sport. I've always been curious about it. Or kayaking is my sport, right? So it's just for me, it's just like, how do I then use the privilege that I've been given to be able to share that with my community? And how do I engage with others to, you know, help them kind of find, you know, their passion, find their strength and run with it?
Yeah, the pay it forward concept is powerful. Also, what a small world. I've been to North Andover like many, many times growing up right around the corner. So it's cool to hear that community stepped up for you.
Yeah. I love that area. I miss Massachusetts a lot. I was actually planning on coming there this fall just because I love the fall.
Yeah.
And I was wanting to share with my partner that beautiful fall, but COVID had other plans. So in the near future.
Yes. So how have you been handling you've mentioned that travel is something that's a pillar or cornerstone in your life. I feel the same way. Mm-hmm. And I'm struggling with it. And so I want to know how are you doing with that?
Yeah, to be honest, it's been very difficult because for the longest time, just like a backstory, like when we came to Canada, we came as refugees. So for 9 years, we've been dealing with immigration. I was a PR for like 5 years because I have to have a certain amount of days living in Canada before I can apply for my citizenship. So as of like last year, around March of last year, I became a citizen. Prior to that, I didn't really have a passport. So I had like a travel document that is issued by the UN, in partnership with the Canadian government. So it's just like a little travel document and, which made it really difficult to travel because a lot of countries don't like it. There's just a lot of discrimination based on this. Even though I was a permanent resident to Canada, I just didn't have a passport. I couldn't get my DRC passport because we were refugees from there. So I just became a citizen. I was like super excited because I'm like, now I can like travel almost anywhere without a problem. Really looking forward to it. And then COVID happened and that really shut that door down. And it's very frustrating because I was like, all this time, my life, it's been a struggle. Even though I traveled to Germany and Poland, I spent time in the Middle East, studying there, like to get those visas in the passport that I had was extremely difficult. It was a lot of money. A lot of information I was basically being interrogated for every visa that I applied for and also get rejected with some. So to have a Canadian passport and to have the privilege to be able to travel somewhere and then being cut was it's been a bummer. But at the same time too, I'm very optimistic. So the way I've been handling it is just being able to explore, Canada. Like Canada is huge. It's a very big country. And so doing a lot of road trips between British Columbia and Alberta, which is like the Canadian Rockies, which is like unexplored area for me. And there's just like amazing trails there, amazing hikes there. And the landscape is just so beautiful. So I find like that's been like a really good opportunity for me to, even though I can't explore the world, but like I'm also exploring locally in a sense of just within my own country, exploring that beauty.
Have you been up to Banff?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I've been up to, we were up Lake Louise, Banff, the Kootenays. We did a 4-day trekking, backpacking trip up on the East Kootenays. And yeah, it was so beautiful. And we really lucked out with the weather as well. So
it's awesome. So when you say 4-day trekking trip, what does that look like?
Yeah. So this hike is called Rock Wall. So it is basically the most beautiful, like mountainous rock that just like creates this insane wall that you kind of hike around it. So it was a 4-day backpacking trip. So we started at one point and every day we were like hiking up to, I think, 17 kilometer. I am sorry to Americans. I don't know what that is in miles.
like 9 or 10-ish.
9 miles? Something like that. I don't know.
It's a good day.
Yeah, so it's about like 10 miles a day-ish. So we were doing that like for the next 4 days. So like every night we're like camping in a different spot. So that was like really a lot of fun, but it was also really, it was hard because there were some days that my legs was tired. The variation of weather that we got, it was super windy, it was super hot, it was super cold, it was snowing. And this is like the end of it's like in August. So it's already like starting to snow up there a little bit. So it was quite interesting.
That's awesome. I ask because I have done an embarrassingly low amount of of camping and backpacking. So what would be your advice for somebody just getting into either longer hiking or camping?
Yeah, my advice would just be like, take it easy, especially when it comes to like hiking. I find taking it easy first, like don't go into it thinking you're going to conquer it, because yeah, first few days, it's hard on the body because your body is getting adjusted. Yeah, so I say taking it easy, and then just taking time to join a lot of different hiking groups and getting to know people in the community who are like constantly going out and going with them, and making sure that you do a good job reading trails and understanding where you are to reduce your chances of getting lost and needing to be rescued. And always hike with somebody. Always have a hiking buddy, and don't forget your bear spray, especially in the Rockies. I was a little bit more terrified because there's so many grizzlies there, but thankfully we didn't run into any. So yeah,
that is good. And bring snacks.
Yeah. And lots of snacks. Like I'm not a chocolate person. I don't like sweet stuff, but on hikes, I find that I enjoy chocolate a lot. So lots of snacks. And that comes with learning, because I think the first time we did we did a 4-day backpacking trip last year in Washington, in the Enchantments area. And we had accidentally underpacked our food. So we kind of like towards the like last evening, we're like really out of food, out of snack. So we're like, never again. So now it's best to overpack food and pack less clothing.
Nice. Switching gears again a little bit. One thing that I like to ask about on this podcast is the concept of balance. As someone who spends a lot of time focused on something you're passionate about, I'm speaking from my own experience, it can be hard to close the laptop or turn off sometimes, but we need to do that for our own sake. And, you know, there's the nice reminder we get when we fly, you know, put your own mask on first before helping those around you. So what, and I like to take that metaphorically versus just literally, although in 2020, put on your mask. So what is your take on balance, and do you believe you are balanced?
I think balance is really important. I am trying to strive to do better at finding that balance. Because I think in the last 3 weeks, I experienced an immense amount of burnout because I was like, go, 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 go. And, doing a lot of different meetings, interviews and all that. And to a point where my body just like could not longer like even pull sentences together. I just kind of lost interest in a lot of things. And it is harmful, even if we do something with passion. I think sometimes it's always important to step away from something for a couple of weeks and just take a break, and just be in that and figuring out what the balance is, having schedule that, you know, we're working 9 to 5 and after 5, like, you know, you don't answer any emails. Or setting boundaries, being like, you know, especially because I'm kind of working for myself right now, it's really difficult to establish those boundaries because it's like relationship. I'm also trying to network. And like, how do I find balance in that? Right. I think it's really difficult. And I don't think I have any answer because I'm still learning. But what I've learned so far is my mental health and my physical health is not worth it. So if something is, you know, if my body's just like not feeling something, it's okay to step away and come back at it in a different time and respect my body. And it's also difficult because with social media and everything, you kind of have to be on top of things, but also like taking breaks when I can and engage less and just kind of, once again, my balance will be on weekends, like trying to be away from my phone or laptop. I'm in either mountain biking or hiking or doing something in nature to kind of restore that balance so that comes Monday, I can feel a little bit energized to be able to do what I need to do. But yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. And as you said, you know, your mental health comes first. If you can't be there for yourself, you can't be there for those around you. My experience this year has been, I'm living on my own for a while, and I realized how much of an extrovert I am and like how much I need to be with other people. So what I did was I went like so into podcasting and connecting with people that way. And I was like recording an episode every day for a 2-week period, like at the start of this quarantine. And it led to like me taking on more tasks, and I caught myself like doing too much and felt the need to pull back. And I was like, this is not a sustainable volume of work and exercise and all this stuff. I don't really know what the tipping point was, but can you acknowledge, you mentioned the last 3 weeks were particularly hard. Did you acknowledge a specific like breaking point, or was it just, mm-hmm. you know, a self-awareness of like, I'm doing too much right now. I need to rest, essentially.
Yeah. For me, my tipping point is like, we had a very intense summer. So with everything that's happening in the state with the Black Lives Matter, and then mm-hmm. like Color the Trails blowing up, my own personal account also blowing up, and then all these opportunities presenting itself, and, you know, because I had kind of quit my job like last year in August. I resigned just so I can focus mostly on building up Color the Trail. So I was like networking a lot, getting a lot of rejection. And then this summer, everybody that had rejected me all of a sudden wants to work with me, and like a lot of meetings. So all of summer was just like one thing after another, a lot of shoots, a lot of deadline to meet. And we were, as I mentioned, we were in the Rockies. We took 2 weeks off to just kind of go on vacation. But even that ended up being a little bit more work related than actual vacation. And then we came back and then did some more work and then went back, took a little time off to try to go on vacation. But that ended up turning a little bit more work. So then when I came back, I just felt like I was like exhausted, and I was just like so tired. Everything is just piling up. And then just seeing like everybody kind of wants like something from me. And then my breaking point, just like, I just realized like I can't be and do everything everybody wants in a certain time frame. It's just like it doesn't make sense. I'm only one person and I can only do much. And that's what I'm also like, for me personally, is like also learning to establish like boundaries and saying no, like I can't do it at this time. Maybe we can do something else in a later time. And just a kind of like respecting myself, as you're saying, like, you know, you got to respect yourself, you know, before anybody else can kind of like respect you as well. So yeah, it's a little bit of everything.
Yeah. I think that, what you shared there about both the rejection and the boundaries is super important. I think that many people need to learn how to say no, mm-hmm. again, myself included, and the ability to advocate for yourself and for like what you need to do is so important. And has that been a learned process for you as well?
Yeah, like it's funny because I'm very good at advocating for other people, but I realize I'm terrible at advocating for myself. I think maybe a lot of people experience this. Like, I'm out there advocating, making sure other people are taken care of, but I don't take the time to figure out, like, am I taking care of myself? Is my mental health okay? Is my physical health okay? Is my relationships okay? So that's what I personally have found. And then this thing of rejection, is also like, you know, it's like, well, now that I'm not getting rejected anymore, should I take all these opportunities instead of kind of like, you know, now I'm doing a little bit better job, like asking like 10 questions and like lots of email before I agree to do anything with anybody. And people are respecting that and respecting the boundaries that I'm slowly beginning to establish. But saying no is really difficult. And I think as a culture, as a whole, all of us like struggle to say no on certain things because we feel like we don't want to disappoint people or we're missing out on an opportunity and stuff like that. But I find like there's so much power when I say no. I find like more people have way more respect and then they always reach back at a different time. Like if I can't deliver what they need right now, we work together to figure out when will be the best time for them to deliver the next one, whatever it is that they need. So it's like you say, like saying no is a very difficult one.
Yeah. And I think it's so important to, again, it's like one of those things that the more you practice it, the easier it gets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's, I mean, the only asset we can't get more of is time. And I think that more and more people are valuing the importance of time and beginning to respect that, you know, everybody has 24 hours in the day. Mm-hmm. It's up to you to figure out how to use it.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, can you repeat that last question?
Yeah. So I was just saying that I think that people are finally starting to realize that time is the only asset that mm-hmm. physically can't get more of.
Yeah.
It's nice to see people, you know, acknowledging that we all have 24 hours in the day and making that a bit more commonplace. One of the things you mentioned a couple of times is mental health. Mental health is something that I love to talk about and advocate for. I think that it is beginning to be normalized. And my experience has been like the first time I posted about going to a therapist, 100 people replied and told me that they also go to a therapist. And I was like blown away that, you know, 800 people saw this Instagram story and 100 of them replied to say that they see a therapist too, which makes me think that if 100 people replied, how many more didn't reply and that applied or were considering it or whatnot. So I thought that was super cool. And so I'm curious, what is your relationship with mental health and potentially therapy as well?
Yeah. I use nature as a means of dealing with mental health because I think it's so important, especially for my own journey and like this life I've lived. It's been a very difficult life in many ways, just because, you know, my experience from the DRC, there was like a civil war going on. So I got to experience war as a child. And then the constant moving, as well as like my parents' like relationship, I feel like there's all that internalized trauma or like whatever it is that's never really spoken of and processed, especially like within like African culture. We don't really talk about mental health or emotions or anything like that. It's like a huge taboo. Culturally. So like I didn't grow up being able to talk about my feelings and things like that. So I found through nature as the most best form of therapy for me. And then through that, I also have a therapist that I work with, but you know, I found like even to arrive to a point where to admit like I need to go see a therapist, I had to first go, for me personally, I found like nature brought up a lot of things, a lot of emotion that I had to process. And then it kind of got me to a point where I was like, yes, now I need to seek actual help with somebody to kind of work through these emotions. So, So I personally think that mental health is something we should prioritize and talk about more and not stigmatize about it, whether a man or a woman, or, you know, however you identify, we need to talk about these things because it's such an important, it's an important thing. And it saves a lot of people from feeling that they're alone. And it just opens up that dialogue and open up and be like, oh, you're going through something similar to me. And, you know, it gives us the opportunity to begin to talk about these things, whether it's on Instagram or whether it's in DMs. People, I feel like in general, people are very eager to talk and share like what their feelings, but I don't know. It's just difficult again to have that conversation unless you're close to somebody. So yeah, I'm all for, yeah, I'm very much for, yeah, putting mental health before anything else, because how I am mentally is going to translate into how I treat other people around me. If I'm not in a good space, I'm not going to treat others around me with love and respect. And that's where we kind of sometimes have problems.
Definitely. I think it's knowing yourself and knowing the, what makes you tick, mm-hmm. and how to play the cards that you've been dealt and how to react to what's going on around you. And, I've been seeing a therapist basically for 2 years, and at the start of the pandemic, I started seeing him weekly. And mm-hmm. sometimes I would just go into the conversation, like not really knowing what we were going to talk about that week. And then other times it would be like, yeah, we're talking about this. Mm-hmm. And I think just having someone like to listen to that and yeah. sort of validate what you're saying is true and what you're mm-hmm. saying is important and what you're saying matters. Mm-hmm. It's like there's nothing more important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, I totally agree with you. Like, I think is the engagement and having that conversation with somebody that can help verify, like, you know, like, yes, this is something that you went through. Like, you know, you're not making it up. I think we all kind of need that conversation. We need to talk about those things. And say validate our feelings, because, you know, because you've gone to feeling something for so long, and most of the time you're dismissed or disregarded instead of actually coming face to face with those emotions and those feelings. So you can at least be at peace. And like you said, like, you know, time is all, you know, time is something we can't really save or have, as we're all just given the same amount of time. So we need to put in the work also in terms of like dealing with our mental health and getting help and therapy and stuff like that, so that then we can try to enjoy this life that we have for very temporarily. I'm just like, I'm a huge advocate for that. And I hope one day to pursue my master's in counseling in the near future and use nature as a form of therapy.
So the nature as a form of therapy is something I'm fascinated with. The reason that I'm curious to hear more about that is the biggest problem related to therapy is accessibility. Mm-hmm. I consider it extreme privilege and luxury that, like, I can go, and mm-hmm. second, like, my therapist, I see him at either 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock during the day. So, like, most people don't have that ability, or it's covered by insurance, or there are these barriers that that make it prohibitive. And I had a conversation on this podcast with my friend Dana, who is a social worker, and she's had her experience has been that sometimes she wasn't able to seek therapy when she needed it most, whether that was due to insurance or cost or whatnot. And so I find that to be like a wildly frustrating piece mm-hmm. of the puzzle, that often the people who would benefit the most, everybody would benefit from it, but mm-hmm. people who might have an acute reason to need it are often the ones that either think that they don't need it or mm-hmm. don't have the accessibility to mm-hmm. get it. So the question I have is more on the accessibility side, because in theory, everyone should be able to access nature. So mm-hmm. when you began that journey, how did you use nature as a form of therapy? And what might you suggest to somebody who's looking to explore that?
Yeah, like for my own, like personally, because I think sometimes we think like we need to go climb a mountain to make nature accessibility. Like go, right. Even walking around our own parks is like a form of therapy, right? So for me, just again, the geography of where I live, I would just go and do like the most popular trail if I was by myself, like without a friend, because I know that's like a very busy trail. There's a lot of people, and just like doing that and like spending time in nature. Vancouver gets a lot of rain. We're like kind of like the rainforest comes in wintertime. So like if I'm not high up in elevation, I'm just like in our forest. It's just like so beautiful, even on a rainy day to go, because everything is so green. Everything is still very alive. And just through that, I just began to realize like how relaxed I was by like spending an hour or two in nature or for a walk. Like I'll come home, I'll be like less stressed. I'll actually be a little bit more focused. And I think part of it is there's immense privilege that I have living where I live. And knowing what I know now, because I did not know this, like, let's say when I first came to Canada, because there was just so many things that I was involved in moving to a new country and stuff like that. But with nature being a therapy, I just tell folks, like, if you can go for a walk somewhere in your park with a friend, I find it is just like a really good way to engage. Or if you have a dog, taking your dog out for a walk, you find yourself like really engaging with nature. And I think because we, for so long, we've been, as humans, we've sort of like lost that touch to nature. We've lost our ability to like engage with nature in a way that's not hostile, or in a way that we're not trying to get something out of nature, but instead of just like going in there and just being in it and embracing it. And also like, I struggle with winter. I love summer more than winter time. So even me picking up skiing like last year, January of last year, and just running with it, I find has really helped me to get over winter depression, winter blues, because we get rain for the next 9 months in Vancouver. And sometimes we can go an entire 2 months without seeing any sunlight. So it's very depressing at times. So learning to find activities, whether it's like skiing is not very accessible, but like snowshoeing or ice skating or just something to kind of like make my body move, I find is really a good way to begin to get your heart rate up and just get your body moving. And, you know, there's a lot of science behind it that says like, you know, a 30-minute walk really does help bring down your, you know, heart rate and your blood pressure and all this. So I just think like us making the time to go to nature, however way we can squeeze it in.
Definitely. I could talk for hours on this topic, but I think I've got one last question for you. Mm-hmm. What do you wish people knew about you?
Yeah. I wish people knew that, to be in the space that I'm in, that by me advocating for Black, Indigenous, and people of color to be in the outdoors, it's not me taking away space from anybody else. It's just for me an opportunity to get more people to enjoy nature in the same way that everybody else enjoys nature. And also recognize that I'm human. I have flaws. I'm not perfect. And I'm just doing the best with what I have. And sometimes my best is never going to be good enough, but at least I'm trying. And I wish we can all just kind of try a little bit harder to make certain spaces more inclusive and more accepting. And and just like discouraging bad behavior and bad commentaries when we're doing whatever it is that we're doing, by like having the integrity to speak up.
Awesome. And totally agree. Okay. So I guess two more questions. Where can people find Color the Trails? Are they called chapters or groups?
Yeah. So yeah, you can find us on Instagram, Color the Trails. And color is spelled the Canadian way. So with O-U-R instead of the America way. And and then you can kind of click on our bio, and we kind of have like our website. We're working on building a different website, so that's on the work. So you can just find us through that right now. And we're pretty good at answering DMs and any questions anybody may have in terms of how they want to be involved. We have two inactive chapters in the States just because of COVID and everything. So I just kind of put a hold on that. My hope is eventually we'll start things up. And then we're also based in Alberta. So if folks are interested in supporting or engaging with Call of the Trails, like, they can always reach us through Instagram.
Cool. And where can we find you on social media?
Yeah, you can find me on, I find like Instagram is the best way to reach me. It's just Juju Mil. So J-U-J-U-M-I-L. You can just kind of send me a DM, and I'm fairly good at trying to answer to everybody messages and engaging. So, or you can always also email me, and my email is kind of linked on Instagram as well.
Awesome. Well, Juju, thanks so much for taking the time to chat. And
thank you, John.
Hope to see you out on the trails and on top of one of those beautiful alpine lakes you post about all the time. That looks so incredible.
Thank you. Thank you for having me today. I appreciate it.
Okay. That's it for today's episode. Like many long runs, it's sad when it has to end. I hope you join in next week on For the Long Run. And in the meantime, happy trails. If you've enjoyed this episode, it would mean a lot to me if you shared it so that others can find it and enjoy it too.